This episode is brought to you by Hired.com. Searching for a new job can feel stressful, scary, and time-consuming. Pushy recruiters try to sell you on roles that you don't actually want, and job boards make you feel like you're throwing your resume into a black hole, never to be seen again. Sometimes you go all the way through an interview process just to find out at the very end that the salary offer or company culture doesn't match what you're looking for. Hired is the world's most intelligent talent matching platform for full-time and contract opportunities in engineering, development, design, product management, data science, sales, and marketing. We make your job search faster, focused, and stress-free. Instead of endlessly applying to companies and hoping for the best, Hired puts you in control of when and how you connect with compelling new opportunities. After completing one simple application, top employers apply to hire you. On Hired, you receive personalized interview requests and upfront salary information so you can make informed decisions about which opportunities to pursue over a condensed timeline. Throughout the process, your dedicated talent advocate will have your back, providing unbiased career coaching to help you put your best foot forward with potential employers. Hired offers access to 4,000 plus innovative employers, including big brands such as Facebook and smaller emerging startups. The size and type of company you want to connect with is totally up to you. We help people find new opportunities in 17 major cities in North America, Europe, Asia, and Australia. Open to relocation? Let us know. Your privacy and autonomy in your job search is of utmost importance to us. That's why Hired hides your profile from your current and past employers. The best part is it's always free for you to find your next job on Hired, no exceptions. We pay you to get hired. Today's listeners can earn double our normal $1,000 hiring bonus by signing up with the show's link. That's right, earn $2,000 for finding your next chapter on Hired. Visit hired.com/reactnativeradio to learn more. This episode is brought to you by dailydrip.com. Daily Drip makes keeping up to date on programming skills easier. You already know how much time it takes to find good resources and learn new languages. What if the hard part of that was already done for you? Sign up for Daily Drip and pick a topic that you want to learn about. Want to learn React Native? How about Elm? Maybe you want to brush up on your CSS and HTML. Every weekday, you'll get a short video or reading delivered to you via email. The best part is it only takes 5 minutes a day. We have a special coupon code just for React Native Radio listeners. If you sign up using the coupon code RNRADIO, all one word, you'll save $9 on your first month, which means you can try out the React Native topic for free. Don't forget to use the coupon code RNRADIO to show support for our podcast. Make learning part of your daily routine with dailydrip.com. Hello and welcome to episode 58 of React Native Radio. Today on our panel, we have Peter Pykarczyk, who has stepped away for a moment, but he'll be right back. I'm your host, Nader Dabit. And our special guest today is Michelle Weststraight. And Michelle is the creator of MobX. And he's here to kind of discuss MobX and kind of talk about everything that goes along with MobX. So Michelle, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
So before we get into the topic, can you kind of talk about how you got into programming and when you're not working on MobX, what are you doing for a living?
I got into programming already at primary school. I had a 268 IBM computer. And actually, I figured it was more fun trying to create games than it was to play games. And somehow that stuck. And so in the end, I studied informatics, computer science, and ended up doing my hobby as a profession. And now I work at the great Dutch-American company, Mendix. And what we do is we build an enterprise application development studio. So that's a mouthful for basically an application that allows you to draw your logic flows, your database models, your forms. And in the end, we execute those models so that you get real applications out of them. So that's a lot of metaprogramming involved, which makes it really fun. It's often super abstract because we don't build software, but we build software to build software. And consulting firms like Gemini and HP, they use that to, in the end, build software for their customers, like insurance companies, banks. So actually, people use it to build a highly complicated software. So that's something really cool to see.
So what is your primary language that you have been programming in? Like now and then in the past, have you always kind of been interested in JavaScript or functional programming, or is it just a bunch of different stuff?
I started with Pascal, Turbo Pascal. Later on, moved to Delphi. Actually, really enjoyed language, but sadly it died. Then moved to Java, and I think I'm now roughly 5 years working with JavaScript as well. And a little Python and those kind of things on side note, but those are my main languages. And the whole functional programming stuff, we worked a lot with that, especially in the university, with stuff based on ML and those kind of things, a bit of Haskell. So that was really fun. Sometimes hard to make applicable, but I think we have done great the last years, because functional programming is more and more now a mainstream thing. So that's really cool to see.
So at the company you're with now, or do you write a lot of JavaScript, or what are you writing right now, you know, at work, I guess?
TypeScript, mainly. So JavaScript in the end, of course. And then everything is able or free to choose its own stack. But for our product, we chose to go with TypeScript. So we have been working with that full time for the last 2 years, I think. And generally, we're really happy with it. It keeps improving very fast. And it's a great language if you have a large code base, which needs to stay maintainable.
Do you use TypeScript with React too? Is your typical setup MobX and React, or what does that stack look like?
Depends. If I can choose for myself, then I always go with TypeScript. Sometimes for demos or tools or those kind of things, I tend to use Babel. But basically, because more people are familiar with that, but my preferred stack is TypeScript indeed.
So can you kind of talk about how MobX came about? Is it something that you knew that you wanted to build when you were working with React, you were looking for like a solution? Or is it more of something that you kind of built into a project and then you kind of turned it into an open source project?
Both of that, actually. So roughly 1.5 years ago, we started a new Greenfield project, and we quite quickly decided we wanted to go with React, because the clean abstractions and the level of control you get on everything you are doing. But then we were missing like a state management solution that is both performant and very accessible for all our developers and easy to get new colleagues working with. And so I started looking into the older frameworks like Knockout and Meteor, because I really liked what they are doing conceptually. It's a very clear model, but it also had a lot of issues and also some areas where it had a bad reputation. So I tried to address exactly those issues. So still take the same ID, but improve the model behind it and implementation. And that was what MobX in the end became. So we really started using it at Mendix first before it got open sourced.
So have you been surprised at how popular and how quickly it has been adopted and used and, you know, in the open source community, but also in a lot of companies?
Yes, actually, yes. Especially because there were, when launching MobX, there were two tough things. One is the reputation reactive programming had at the moment, like the digest loop of Angular, etc. It reminds people a lot of Angular and Knockout, and also the bad things associated with it. So you have to explain very clearly why MobX is still different, even though it's based on the same conceptual ID. And on the other hand, there were the Flux wars, and everybody was tired of seeing yet another statement and solution. So that also made it tricky, because people really, in the beginning, didn't feel for trying yet another thing. I think basically it were the extremely positive testimonials from the few people that did try it that got the thing started.
So when you were building this application, why didn't you just go with Redux or something that was already out of the box? Of course, now we're all using MobX and we enjoy it. So, you know, I'm sure everyone's glad it's there. But just out of curiosity, why go through all this instead of kind of using something that's already out there? What did you not like about Redux or the existing solutions?
There were a few issues. First of all, we just didn't get a performance, the Redux model, without jumping to all kind of hoops. Secondly, we also have third partners that build extensions on top of our application. And so we just wanted to give them the model of our data to work with and then an easy programming model against it. So that's very intuitive to write. So just change the pieces in the model you want to change and trust that we'd further take care of anything you change. So that is processed in the UI that's sent to the backend without needing to reveal all the inner details you would need to reveal when using reducers, for example. So basically, the transparent tracking was very important for us. So that if you render some data, you don't have to declare what you're rendering. So then it makes it easier to extend for third parties, for new colleagues, etc.
So kind of, can you kind of go into how MobX was built? Like what it's using under the hood? Is it, it's using like RxJS or something like that. Is that correct?
No. It basically doesn't use anything under the hood. I started with RxJS though, but that caused actually quite some overhead without benefiting the whole thing much. Basically, what MobX does in contrast to RxJS is that its tracks, which streams, so to speak, have been used by a function. So after tracking, you need to subscribe to the necessary streams and then subscribe from the other ones. And if you try to do that on the granularity that MobX works with, so on every attribute, etc., then it becomes kind of expensive because you have all those dispatchers, all those subscribe listeners, which you need to maintain and clean up. And MobX under the hood is just a set of observables, which have very simple arrays with simple pointers to things they are observed by. And so that's much more efficient than having actual subscription listeners running around. So basically, it could have been built on top of RxJS, but in the end, it didn't use much specific from RxJS.
Can you give us a quick overview of how observables work?
So there are a few important notions in MobX. One is observables, so these are a piece of state of holding value. And the second one are derivations, coming into flavors, values that are derived from your observables or side effects that are triggered by your observables. And what MobX basically does is when you start a reaction, so that's something like the render function of the components, then it registers that function on a stack. Just to note, this is the reaction that is currently running. From there on, whenever you read an observable value, that function gets associated with that observable value, so that the observable value knows, hey, this reaction is interested in my value because it has read it. So then later on, when in any future, when that observable value gets changed, it will notify that reaction, saying, you have been invalidated, my value has changed, so probably you have to reevaluate in order to make sure you are still in a consistent state. So that's basically what happens. That's how functions get invalidated. And what makes it especially interesting is that in MobX, this all happens synchronously. So you can cannot ever observe a stale value because some function still needs to run after updating some state. I guess that's highly abstract. Was that a followable explanation?
Yeah, that's awesome. So how can you compare that to, you know, something like Redux, right? So most people that listen to React Native Radio use Redux, and I'm sure a lot of them would like to switch to MobX, but it's not about, a lot of it might have to do with the fact that they don't understand observables, right? And so is there any way you can kind of compare that to Redux? It's okay if you can. It's just, you know, I'm trying to give folks like the, you know, like an easy path to, you know, giving it a shot.
Well, it's actually quite trivial. So a Redux store is in itself is an observable. So it has a subscribe function. And every time you change your state, you produce new states, this observable notifies all the selectors that are connected to the store and update them. The difference with MobX and Redux is that in Redux, the changes are very coarse-grained. So you have only one observable that captures the entire state in a single value. While in contrast, in MobX, you have maybe hundreds of thousands of observables. So every attribute of any object in your state is a very small store that notifies exactly those components listening to it. And so in the Redux model, you just get that entire new value, and you still have to figure out from there on in your selectors or with your connect functions how to pick the proper piece of data from that state that you need in your component. So that's one thing. And second thing, from there on, it needs to decide whether to re-render or not. And so that's the difference with the MobX model. It checks for you which values you are used from, have used from the state, so you don't have to select that yourself. And because the observables are very fine-grained, it knows already exactly what is the least amount of components to update after each change. So instead of having one observable stream with one big immutable value, instead have many very fine-grained observables.
So one reason I hear a lot of people going with MobX is because of the ease of use and how easy it is to pick up. So a lot of people that are using React, they are looking for a state management solution. And whether or not they're beginners or not, just adding more complexity is never, you know, a good thing. So a lot of people are saying when they have been using Redux, or maybe they tried to learn Redux, they look at MobX and it ends up being much easier to pick up and get going with. Would you agree with that? And kind of, can you talk about the API and if you kind of had that in mind when you were building MobX?
Yeah, I agree with that. And yes, I very had much had that in my mind. So when I designed MobX, I started writing on paper, how do I want to write my React components? What should they look like? And especially the interesting question for me, what is the code I do not want to write? Because with every component which we need to build, there are other colleagues which need to understand what the component is doing, how it gets the data. There are future colleagues which need to be ramped up with the code base. So what it was really designed to is making writing components as trivial as possible. So it was just basically about, I have a component here, it renders these pieces of data, and that's all I want to know about. And I am not interested in how they are updated in the future. So it needs to be as simple as the Excel model. You just write down a formula that expresses one time, this is how I transform values into a new value or into a graph. And then after that, it's the responsibility of the system to make sure that derivation stays correct. But when I write a formula, I don't think about the future. I only think about the current values I have. And that is basically the model MobX was designed for. So you don't say anything about subscribing or data you need, because you just have data being passed in as props at that moment. And with that, you render just once. And after that, it's up to the system to re-render again when needed. So that is how it was, what it was designed for. And I think that is the thing that makes it feel so simple for people.
So I have another question, I guess. A lot of people automatically associate MobX with React. Is that a fair association? Is that something that you built? Was MobX kind of like built for React, or can it be used with other JavaScript frameworks? And is it as easy to integrate with other JavaScript frameworks or even just plain vanilla JavaScript?
Good question. So at Mendix, we primarily use MobX with React. So that's the reason why it was always pushed in the React community. The examples were React applications, there are React bindings by default. But unlike Angular or Ember, etc., MobX itself is framework agnostic. So it's just about run a function whenever relevant observables has changed. So that's why there are also two packages, just the core MobX packets and MobX React itself. And you see also that there are not only bindings for MobX for the React-like frameworks like React and Inferno, but there are also bindings for Angular, Meteor. I also see people sometimes using it with web components, with jQuery. So in principle, the whole concept is generic. But the foundations or the primary use case lies in the React plant. I have to note we also use it server-side. So not even for the UI, but also for maintaining data stores and computing complex rules whenever needed. So that's, the mechanism is very generic and not UI specific. And I think that's a big difference with other data flow libraries.
So what are the best practices for using MobX for server-side rendering along with React? And are there any examples for people to kind of check it out?
There are some boilerplates that's included. Actually, MobX doesn't generally do much when doing server-side rendering. And that's basically because you take a snapshot of your rendering. So there is a, in the MobX React bindings, there is a server-side rendering mode. And what it does is basically just nothing. That's because you render only once. MobX doesn't have to do any of its reactive tricks. So you just render your component tree as if MobX wasn't there at all. And that's basically the whole model of the server-side rendering, specifically for React. Of course, the main trick is to make sure you don't start rendering before you fetched all your data.
Hey, so I've got a question about MobX React. So MobX React has a peer dependency of React 15, but React Native 43 started using React 16. It'll probably show a lot of warnings. And my question for you is there any risks to upgrading right now? Should we wait to use React 16 when MobX React is ready for that?
Tough question. I didn't try React 16 yet. But so far, the great experience with React has been very pleasant because they are so consistent with their APIs and semantics. So if I'm not mistaken, MobX React will even run with React 0.13 still. But I didn't run it on React 16, so I can't give guarantees. But it should be easy enough to run the test suite against it.
Cool. This sort of leads to my next question, one that I don't know too much about, but maybe you do. So with Fiber, the new reconciliation engine, you can stream data onto the screen. Maybe I don't completely understand streaming yet, but it would be cool to leverage that with MobX and observables and be able to stream, you know, data from MobX directly into React for some really performant things. Am I completely wrong with that idea, or do you know anything about how that could possibly work?
I'm not sure yet. Fiber is still a big mystery for me beyond the conceptual idea. What it looks like is that they are still figuring out itself, how it works together with set states still. So let's even learn how it exactly works with external state management libraries. But beyond that, I think the Mobix model is already very oriented towards updating individual components. So I think that would make it, it would still be easy to do things like that, I imagine.
So if someone wanted to learn MobX, what would be the best place for them to kind of go and start looking at examples and resources?
There's an ECHET course. I think that's a good way to learn it if you like learning from video tutorials. Besides that, usually I prefer myself learning by just starting to hack around. And I think then it's just the easiest way to try it maybe. It's just take an existing simple project, maybe some other React boilerplate, and just yarn a Mobix React and start converting the state into observables and see how that takes away a lot of course for you.
So I have another question about actually your career and this project and open source in general. Is this kind of like your first extremely popular open source library? And if so, kind of, can you talk about how you've managed to keep it going, I guess, along with keeping your career going and staying on top of all of your day-to-day stuff? Because I'm sure you're busy anyway. And how has this affected your career in general?
There are a lot of questions.
Yeah,
it's my first open source project, first successful one. How to stay on top of it? Well, actually, there are a lot of active members in the community that react to issues, chime in on the GitHub channel, and that's really helpful. Otherwise, it would be manageable. Also, because Mobix was so successful, at Mendix, I got and still have dedicated time to work on Mobix and support the community in this way. And I noticed what one thing is what's very important, and I think that is why many software open source projects also don't succeed. It's very important to be able to not just show what it's a library does from a technical perspective, but also make clear how it influences your thinking about programming and what the philosophy behind the thing is. And I think somehow that message got people interested. And that answered probably only half of your questions.
Yeah, no, I agree about the community being a huge part. It's so awesome when you can kind of get something going and then kind of not only, you know, there's no way to kind of add all of the features and respond to all the requests and bugs in a project that gets this big and this popular. So it's always amazing to see people jumping in and helping out. I know with React Native Elements, I haven't had enough time to work on it lately as much as I would like. So I've had a couple of people that have literally taken charge of the entire project and kind of, I feel like now I'm almost more of a project manager than an actual contributor because they're doing such a great job. And I feel like it's almost like they love doing it and it's going better than it even was at the beginning. And I was amazed to see that happen. And it's a really, really cool feeling.
Yeah, exactly. And the cool thing also is when that happens, it allows you to still focus on the big picture now and then. So to still push the project forward, not on the details, but on the bigger conceptual lines. So because so many people are now chiming in on Mobix issues and helping each other out, it also gave the time to go experiment on the next steps, which I'm now doing with the Mobix state tree. So that's quite cool that is still possible, even at this stage.
So what is Mobix state tree?
So one of the most heard complaints and one of the best features of Mobix, is that it's quite unopinionated on how you structure your data, how you organize your stores, basically how you design your architecture. So many developers really like that because it allows them to fit it into their architecture they already have, or they're coming from, maybe they're coming from Knockout or Backbone, or they just have their own opinion about anything. And basically Mobix is just interested where your, what your observable are, and that isn't interested at all where they live or how they are organized. But on the other hand, that's also confusing for people, because people sometimes just want to have a clear guide. How should I organize my stores? Where should I put my actions? How should I do that? So what Mobix state tree is basically a opinionated design for data stores, so that you which you can use, and then you have a very opinionated way of how to organize your application. And because it's opinionated, it can also give you a lot of cool stuff for free, like emitting JSON batches, time traveling, replaying actions, those kind of things. So it's basically an idiomatic state container for Mobix, which you can use if you want to have a ready-to-use architecture.
So can you kind of talk about the future of Mobix and where you see it going, and if maybe what you just talked about is kind of part of where it's headed, and like features and stuff like that.
For Mobix itself, I think the project is pretty completed. There's just still a few things missing, which I would like to add. One is implementing observable objects on top of proxies. But the thing with that is, they are, as far as I know, still not supported in the Safari browsers. So that's I'm still waiting for that. So that's one thing I really would like to do. And for most other stuff, I think it's pretty much finished.
Do you ever see yourself creating a new framework that will surpass Mobix? Did you have any, you know, right? Because like Mobix has like a certain purpose. Do you ever see something else in your mind that will sort of supersede that?
No, I don't think so. Because I can imagine that at some point other frameworks come up with libraries that does even better. That's perfectly possible. But I think the scope of Mobix is limited in that sense, and the conception model is limited. And I think within within that model, it does its job very well. I don't feel something is missing there at the moment. I doubt I can come up with something better.
Well, because this is a show about React Native, I'm kind of curious about your opinion of React Native. Have you used it, and kind of do you like it, and do you like, what's the future in your opinion of kind of where mobile app development is going as far as React Native is concerned, or native is concerned, I guess?
Funny enough, I didn't use it yet myself. I know Mobix works with it because people write things about it all the time, but I didn't get any chance to do it myself. And Mobix, though, we do heavily invest on React Native. So we already had a mobile client basically built on Cordova. And we decided to go for React Native for quite some reasons. One is the clear component model, the reuse of the code across our platforms, so both mobile and desktop. The very active development of Facebook on React Native. These are all very great things. So I definitely see a very bright future for React Native. So yeah, for us, it's something we're heavily investing on. So for that reason, we also are very actively searching for React Native engineers that have experience with React Native or want to work with React Native to get if more React Native knowledge specifically in-house.
So is that with the company you're with, or is that for MobX, the actual open source project?
No, for the company.
Okay, awesome. Well, where can they kind of go to learn more about the opportunities there? Can they just reach out directly to you?
Yeah, they can reach to me, or they can go to manix.com/jobs.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, definitely. Okay, so I guess we'll go ahead and get to the picks. Peter, do you have any picks?
Yeah, so in my free time, I've been spending a lot of time working with Reason ML. If you haven't heard of it, it's a new language. Well, it's been around for a bit, but Facebook is just starting to market it. Anyway, what is Reason? Reason is sort of like a derivative of OCaml, and it can compile down to bare metal or use something like BuckleScript to generate JavaScript. It's super performant. You can actually, so basically if you're writing JavaScript or Reason ML, the Reason ML compilation will be more performant than what you wrote by hand, which is pretty cool. Check it out. Just, if you Google, Reason project, you'll find a great link, to get started.
Awesome. I've been wanting to look at Reason, so I will check it out. My picks are going to be, the first one is going to be Shadum V5. They released it today. This is Monday, the first Monday in April, I believe April 3rd. So they released it this morning, and it's a really cool platform, and we're going to have those guys on the show in about 2 weeks. It basically allows people that are less technical to build React Native apps, and then you're able to kind of go in and edit the source code to do really cool stuff. The cool part about it for me was being able to create an e-commerce solution very quickly. And that's something that a lot of people want to do, and they've kind of made it really easy. There's like 40 or 50 different components that they already have pre-built out similar to e-commerce. So it's very polished. They have like over 30 or 40 people that have been working on this for a long time. So it's a very polished product. So I would recommend check and shout them out. My other picks are going to be Chain React coming up in Portland. That's going to be in July, and it's going to be the first React Native conference here in the United States. If you want to learn more about Chain React, go to infiniteRed.com/ChainReactConf. Also, React Native EU is going to be in September. It's going to be a React Native conference in Europe. And if you're interested in that, go to react-native.eu, and all the information is there, how to sign up and how to register as a speaker. My last pick is going to be React Native training. We've gotten more into a lot of corporate stuff lately. So if you're looking for any type of on-site or any type of even webinar type React Native training, go to reactnative.training and learn more. And if you'd like to reach out to me on Twitter and have any questions like that, feel free to do so. I think that'll go ahead and wrap up episode 58 of React Native Radio. Michelle, thank you so much for coming on. This was a packed episode with a lot of information, and I think it's going to be very useful to a lot of people.
You're welcome.
Okay, that wraps up episode 58. We'll see everyone next week.